Howdy, 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 folks. Welcome back to Hoot and a Half. I'm Matt King.
And I'm Mike Sheffer.
And our guest today is...
You.
No, it's you,
it's
Mike.
It's you. It's
no,
you,
it's
Matt.
You. It's us. Mike and I decided today would just be a really fun day and a great opportunity for you to get to listen to just us banter and interview one another. And I'm recording this right now after we've already had our discussion. And I just want to say, Mike, this has been one of my actually favorite episodes that I have done so far with this podcast, because you guys hear a lot of us on the podcast interviewing other people and them telling their own stories. But on this one, you get to kind of know the brains behind
Hoot and a Half.
And I've really enjoyed talking to you. And
it was really an easy conversation to have too. I mean, we talk literally every day all the time. And this, I think, is a kind of it's a new approach. We don't have a guest, although I think we are, the way I consider it is we are guests on our own podcast. But
yeah,
this is just kind of like a snippet of what a conversation between Matt and I would be in the car, at my house, at Matt's house, wherever it is. And we do hope that you guys enjoy hearing a little bit about our backstory, how we got to know each other, school, all that stuff.
Oh yeah. Just get to know who we are and who we were. And I liked it so much that I wanted to honestly keep recording.
That's, I mean,
how,
if people like this, I think we could
do this
than
more
one.
Often.
Yeah.
So that's why I encourage you guys to listen to this episode, because we may be doing this a bit more often. So without further ado, enjoy this episode of Hoot and a Half
with Matt King
and Mike Sheffer.
I think they know who the guest is.
It's you, Mike Sheffer.
I think you're the guest.
I'm the guest?
I think so.
I'm your guest? You're my guest?
You are a guest on your own podcast.
Oh, be our guest. Be our guest.
Be our guest. Beauty and the Beast?
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I saw that on Ice in seventh grade. They had an ice skating production of it somewhere in New Jersey. It couldn't have been good, but
Beauty
I remember
and the Beast. I bet it was.
It might have been good. It might have been in New York. I might have like went to Broadway for it. Was it a Broadway show?
Yes, with Christy Carlson Romano, this sister from Even Stevens.
How do you? Are you serious? You like know that this movie or this play was on Broadway?
I know it was on Broadway, and it was with Christy Carlson Romano from Even Stevens. She played Ren on Even Stevens, and when. Because after Even Stevens ended, I mean, she was still Kim Possible, but nobody knew what her move was going to be. Was she going to be in the movies? Was she going to stay on Disney? She hit Broadway, and she was in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. But I don't
was
know.
Was it on Ice?
Oh, but did you know that I was in Beauty and the Beast when I was in high school?
On Ice?
No, not on Ice. No,
if it's not on Ice, don't talk to me.
I'm very happy that you went and saw a theater production.
I don't remember it. I don't know if it was Broadway. It might have been just like the local New Jersey township on Ice. But do they do that? Is that?
Yeah, there's Disney on Ice. There's so many Disney on Ice shows.
And they're like
sense.
Legit productions.
Yes.
Okay, so that's probably what I saw.
But how do you sing and ice skate at the same time?
That's, you have to have ridiculous stamina and lots of training. And singing is like a very athletically and like physically exhausting activity. Apparently it's the most physically demanding instrument to play is singing.
But the actors can't be that good because they have to be figure skaters first.
I know. Well, they could, maybe they are the best out of all of them.
But who devotes their life to figure skating and then on top of it are like, oh, but I want to do theatrical.
It's a pretty narrow niche.
It is. But I was in Beauty and the Beast. Do you know which character I played?
Chip.
No, my brother played Chip, though.
Close. I got one. I mean, that's pretty close in the family.
I played
Beauty.
No, I did. As flattering as that would be, I did not play Beauty. I played LeFou. You know who LeFou is?
No.
It's Gaston's little minion. You know who Gaston is?
The bad guy?
Yeah, the bad guy. The antagonist. The one who's after to marry Belle. Even that mug that sits there right by my computer says, good show, LeFou. My good friend Richard Ross gave it to me.
I bought a Chip cup that already had the chip in it.
Why?
Because it was like the souvenir from the thing. I thought it was so cool to see that they manufactured it with the defect in it. Because, you know, he has a little chip in his cup.
Yes.
So, like, they manufactured it with a little... I mean, it's clearly, like, made in a mold, but, like, the chip is in the cup, and it has, like, a piece missing, and it was, like, that's so cool.
Made out of glass?
It was, like, plastic.
Okay, it was plastic.
No,
that'd be
like
really interesting if it was glass that was already purposefully chipped. Oh, have you ever been in a musical, though?
I was never been in a musical, but I have been. I was in a play in college.
That's right. What's it called? Jack and Sally?
Gina and Sally. That's some deep Mike Schaeffer history that is crazy that you even know, considering I met you after college.
And you told me about this.
So, yeah. So, basically, what happened was I had a roommate, and he really wanted to be in the play. He was very artistic, read poetry, showed me all these obscure Bob Dylan songs, and he was very artsy and, like, he was reading Thoreau, the book that you were reading, Walden.
Walden, yeah.
He was reading that in our, like, sophomore year of college. And he told me that there was a student-run production where the students write, direct, and star and produce all the plays. It's all original stuff. It's all student-based. And he wanted to audition, but he was like a little bit nervous to audition. So I went with him just to like be a come-with guy, support him, make him feel good. And when I got there, there was like no one auditioning. So he was like, well, you should just audition too for the fun of it. So I was like, sure, I guess. And they gave me a page. I like memorized the line. It was like one page of dialogue. And I did the audition to play some punk kid. And I just was like huffing and puffing and did my thing. And then like it was silent. These four seniors who were just looking at me like, any role you want, we'll give you. And I was like, is there a starring role available? And they were like, yeah, you want it? And I was like, sure. And then I had the role.
Wasn't there only two roles though?
In that specific play, it was like a group of five plays. Oh. So he didn't get any of the plays. And I got the star in like the big one, which I felt so bad about.
It wasn't in the opening scene. You have to do a kickflip.
Yes, it wasn't in the opening scene, but yeah, like I added to the character that he was a skateboarder because I love skateboarding. So I brought that to the character because it's not like a Tennessee Williams play where there's very serious history. It was like these two seniors wrote a play about a schoolyard bully, and so I just added like, hey, would it be okay if he had a skateboard? And then because I would skate to class anyway, so I just incorporated that into the character. And then during one of the scenes, I do like a little kickflip in the play, and all my friends came out and saw it.
How many nights?
It was a 4-night run, one matinee. It was like a Thursday through a Sunday, and two on Sunday or whatever it was. And
did you nail the trick every night?
It was the only time I ever got nervous. Was like right before that scene. No one could talk to me. I was like Daniel Day-Lewis before a role. Just like nobody can talk to me. I need to sit here and know that I'm going to nail this trick before I do it. And every time I had to say a line while I was doing it, because it was like me like turning one of the kids against the other kid. And now I had to be super cool and badass. And I said my line, did the kickflip, skated off screen or offset. And every night was a smash.
Screw you guys. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Kickflips off stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Within anger.
Yeah. And it was, I loved it. Like I didn't think I would like it, but you get to like understand a lot about yourself. You get to understand about other people. Like I would never have been friends with any of these kids because I wasn't in the theater program. I didn't know them, but I ended up making like really good friends, seeing how directors think and work and like the writer. And it was cool. And you similarly were very active in your
Multiple musicals, multiple plays, yeah. One act plays. Our school, the school I went to in Carrollton, Texas, my high school, a suburb outside of Dallas. We were like top in the state for our theater department.
For theater?
For our theater and speech and debate.
Yes, yeah, so that's what I know about mostly, is that you were a big speech and debate guy.
But our theater program was big time. So Texas is like split up into different divisions based on the size of your school. So there's like 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A. 5A is like the biggest school out of like the population of
school. The divisions, like similarly in college, there's D1 athletes, D2. This is divisions based on the size of your school.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure our school has won state multiple times, or at least two times, and we've placed in the top three many times.
What division are you?
5A while I was there. And
is
then
that the
now,
biggest?
Now I think it's 4A.
Is that the biggest or the smallest?
It's the biggest.
Okay. So you're competing like against the best.
Yeah. All the schools in the state were competing for the top prize.
What is that?
That's a line from School of Rock.
Oh. Okay.
But we did like Arthur Miller plays, Death of a Salesman, A View from the Bridge.
In high school?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I still remember like my opening monologue. Like, I'm a lawyer. Now, in this neighborhood, to meet a lawyer or a priest on the street is unlucky. You see, in Sicily, where their fathers came from, the law has not been a friendly idea since the Greeks were beaten. But this is Red Hook. This is the slum that faces the seaward side of the Brooklyn Bridge. Now, we're quite civilized, quite American, and my practice is entirely unromantic.
What play is that?
A View from the Bridge.
By who?
Arthur Miller.
Wow. Now, you just recited the opening line of an Arthur Miller play?
Yes, but it's a one-act play. So you would have to cut down a two-act play into one act. So what I just recited is like an abridged version of the monologue. We did a lot of Arthur Miller plays. What kind of a schooling did you grow up in, Mike?
Pretty unique school. I didn't go to public school. I went to a private Jewish school from like kindergarten or pre-nursery, whatever it's called, through eighth grade. It was a Jewish school in a small town in New Jersey. There was, I think, 10 or 9 kids in my whole grade, and each grade was similarly sized. So you basically like know everyone in the school. Everyone knows each other's families. It's like a very small community. There were public schools in the neighborhood too, and I was friends with the public school kids, but in my school, it was just the same 10 kids throughout the day. And then, which was a Jewish school. So half of it is like Jewish studies. Half of it is your traditional math, science,
how
English.
How many kids a day? Or what was like the size of your class?
Like, so when you do the Jewish classes, it's only the guys. So they split up the boys and girls for the Hebrew classes. So okay. Like for like the Hebrew classes, half of the day, it's only you and like 4 other dudes. And then for the English classes, it's the whole class, which is like the 4 other dudes plus the 4 or 5 other girls. And that's the
because
whole grade.
They want you to be very focused.
Yes, during your learning, religious studies, you can't be distracted by.
Oh.
Yeah.
The only time for us in school when they separated us by our gender was to teach us about our growing bodies and getting into
puberty. Right, yeah, like in health class or in the locker room.
Did they ever teach you that?
No, they don't have any like health, gender, sex, any of that stuff.
So that's all on your own. Your parents got to teach you that stuff.
Yeah, which is why I think in like most religious schools, not just Jewish schools, but like most religious schools, a lot of students are uninformed about those things because they don't learn it in religious private schools.
How do you think they taught me?
I've seen like the only thing I knew about that was like the ways that it's presented in media, like on TV and in the movies. It's the big gym teacher explaining like, all right, guys, here's how it works. And like, it's super awkward. And we had the internet like just come out as we were growing up. So we got to do a little bit of research on the internet, but I imagine you guys had like the classic.
It was fifth grade. They separated all the guys and all the girls.
Fifth grade?
I'm pretty sure.
For what class?
This is just puberty. It's the day they taught us that our bodies are changing and we need to be prepared for it. They didn't teach us about sex.
So it's preemptive.
Preemptive, but teaching us that our bodies are changing and what to expect as we enter this period of change. So we went into a room and all the guys sat down and we watched this videotape of them explaining what puberty is.
Yeah, I've heard about this, that they show you guys like weird 1970s public education.
I remember right when they clicked play on that TV, everybody just burst out laughing.
Because you all know what's coming. It's not a shock to you.
Yes. Okay. And it's just so cheesy and cringy. But it was just saying, your voice is going to change, you're going to get taller, and you're going to grow hair in different places, and you're going to have feelings. And at the end of it, they gave us a pamphlet showing us like little diagrams of your underparts and what can happen as you get older, and some Old Spice deodorant.
Wow. Yeah. So it was like going to like the doctor and they give you a little care package. Like when you go to the dentist and they give you a toothbrush.
But then the girls, they went and they were told like that they're going to have periods and they're going to have a menstrual cycle.
In fifth grade?
Yes, and they gave them pads.
Yeah, that didn't happen in my...
Oh, I can't believe the word puberty. I still internally cringe and like sweat when I think about it because it was such an awkward... word and phrase.
And you learn about it in a time when everything is really monumental, so it stays monumental as you get older.
And you don't want to think about it. You don't want it to happen. I remember my dad, my dad's just like has a hairy chest and everything. He's like, one day you're going to look just like me. And I was like, no!
When you're like in fifth grade and just like want to jump on a trampoline, you're like, I don't want to look like
No. And then in seventh grade, that's when they gave us the STD talk.
Oh my God, boys, dude.
And girls, and it was our nurse, and she would just tell us like slideshows of different STDs. So she'd be like, if you have sex, you can get herpes. Like it was so fast, but it would show you.
Did you know these things like already, and like you knew it was coming because you guys already talked about it, or was there actual new information that you were learning from these classes?
No, I mean, you're a seventh grade kid. Kids talk.
That's what I'm saying.
But the thing is, there are some kids who aren't having those conversations at home, and they need to at least be told about it. I remember I looked up just what sex was. I just picked the encyclopedia and just read all about it. The encyclopedia is pretty descriptive when it tells you what sex actually is.
Yeah.
But wait, you went through Jewish school
through eighth grade.
Through eighth grade. And then you went into high school.
No, then I went to a Jewish high school, was an hour away from my home. The classes were from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. every day. And it was an hour away.
8 a.m. to 5 p.m.? That's a job.
Yeah, I know.
That's 8 to 5, not even 9 to 5.
And it's an hour away. So I had an hour commute. So in the wintertime, I would wake up when it was dark outside and I wouldn't get home until it was dark outside. And then one or two nights a week, you had to stay until 7 p.m. because there was like extra Jewish classes. And guys and girls were separated for every single class.
But so, you're still in the same building?
Yeah, we were in the same building, just different floors. And it was you had to wear a collared shirt, had to be tucked in. It was like what I think people consider Catholic school. Not mean with people that are evil and like smacking your hands with rulers or any of that, but it was strict. You had to have a collared shirt or a button-down shirt tucked in. I remember one day my shirt wasn't tucked in and one of the like teachers called me aside. He's like, hey, and he was fucking with me, but I didn't know. And I was like, so many rules. But he was like, yo, hey, you know, I love you, but like your shirt's been untucked all day. I thought you would have corrected it by now. It's already lunchtime. We called your parents. They're coming to pick you up. You're going to be suspended from school for 3 days for not having your shirt tucked in. And I burst into tears.
What?
Yeah, I was so upset.
Because he had been watching you for,
because like I didn't have my shirt tucked
in. One day of getting your shirt untucked cost you a 3-day suspension.
He was joking with me.
Oh.
But I was so like nervous about all these rules and how long the days were and like never being outside. And it was so much pressure that like I just cracked. And he was like fucking around. He was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was totally joking. Like, I don't even care. I just wanted to ask you about like this movie or something. And he just made this joke.
Oh my.
And then I kind of realized like, this is not for me. Like, I'm not a guy who's going to be in the military. I'm not going to be following rules. I can't live like this. And I told my mom, like, yo, I can't go back to that next year.
For my school, we didn't have uniforms, but we had a dress code. But we had pretty close to uniforms in elementary school for a public school. So I'm pretty sure kindergarten through second grade, you could wear whatever you wanted. And then around third grade, uniforms, shirts had to be tucked in. We could only wear red, white, or blue, no branding on it, no polo, no
really?
No logos.
It's like a brand deal.
Logos or anything, no. And but we had to wear our shirts tucked in, which I hated.
In what grades?
This was elementary school.
Why? Was it a public school?
It was a public school. Well, I think our public school was kind of going through a big change community-wise, and some schools in different areas voiced some concerns, thinking that clothing could sometimes reflect your home life, and kids get kind of fixated on logos or what's cool or what's trendy. And sometimes some of these kids came from just homes where they may be wearing this same shirt multiple times a week, and they just can't afford to have a new outfit all the time.
Right.
And with that causes teasing between kids and all this tension, and they wanted to just kind of eliminate that as a distraction from the classroom. But on Fridays, you could wear the school spirit shirt and
casual Fridays
and have it untucked.
Oh, so, casual Fridays.
Casual Fridays. But there was always like the dress code in high school. Like you couldn't, I don't know, like girl. It was mostly, it's all for girls. Really.
I know.
Oh,
I know.
Raise your hands if we can see your midriff.
Right.
Writing you up.
If and the dress has to be below your fingertips or something.
Yes, exactly.
Ugh.
Oh,
garbage.
But an hour away was your school?
That's the other thing, is it was an hour away on a good day.
Right on the magic Jew bus. Yeah.
Pretty much. There was like a passenger van, like a Sprinter van, that just picked up the 8 or 10 kids that were on the way to that school. So I just use it to listen to music, just kind of like sleep. And I went to the classes, and also like the teachers at the school were not qualified. Private school teachers are very different than public school teachers. They're a private institution. So the requirements to be a teacher don't fall under like the traditional degrees that you need to have or tenure or any of that stuff. So, and they also, the other thing is that when you go to this Jewish school that I went to, and I'm not sure if it's the same for every Jewish school, they would always tell you, oh, you know, they don't like Jewish kids over at that public school. You don't want to go to public school. They're going to shove you in the locker and they're going to know you're Jewish and they're going to beat you up. They're all doing drugs and cursing over there.
Who said this?
All the teachers, like the rabbis and the teachers, like they try and convince you that public school is this evil place where if you go there, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you just for being Jewish. Sure, there's anti-Semitism, but I was so scared of public school that I didn't even consider going until I'm like, dude, this is not sustainable to go basically have a full-time job to go to high school and then come home and do homework. And I was playing guitar. I was playing drums. I was in a band.
Right.
I wanted to like watch Dragon Ball Z after high school. High school is supposed to be fun, and I just was not having fun. So I told my mom, and then literally, it was one conversation. I thought I was going to have to make a PowerPoint and explain all the reasons why I can't continue going here. One conversation, she was like, all right, we'll sign you up for public school. So I get to the first day of public school, and it's 10th grade now. So I missed freshman year of high school, which is like a year where a lot of people make their friends and learn the ropes of high school. It's a big transition, blah, blah, blah. And there was this concept of homeroom, which I never had before. You go to your classroom for 5 minutes to ensure attendance. And I didn't understand. It was like a 5 minute class. That can't be right. That can't be right. And I was like, hey, the first day I get there, I was so nervous. And I'm like asking around, like, what is homeroom? They're like, what do you mean? Just go to 206. And I was like, but it's only 5 minutes. They're like, yeah, that's what homeroom is. And I didn't understand it. I get to the homeroom and I sit down. I'm the first person there. And like slowly by slowly, people start coming in. And I, first of all, first time I'm seeing like girls that are my age now in a year. And so like, I'm like, oh my God, girls are so hot. This is great. There's all these guys who are not Jews all of a sudden that are like 6 feet tall. I'd never seen a 6 foot tall person my age before. You know, Jewish people are not known to be super tall. So like, I see this guy like 6 feet tall, another guy's like 5'10", and I'm like 5'5" in high school. And it's just like so intimidating. And then the first guy I see is this big dude, football player, blonde hair, walks in on crutches and his leg is broken. And my first thought was, holy shit, this kid probably kicked the shit out of someone and he's just walking in and he's ready to beat up the next person that looks at him the wrong way. And he comes in with crutches and he sits right next to me. And I am petrified that I'm just going to say the wrong thing. All those high school bully movies are going to come to life and I'm going to be in a locker. I thought I made the biggest mistake of my life. He sat right next to me. And he like just started talking to me. He's like, oh, what's up, man? I haven't seen you around. I was like, hi, I'm Mike. And he was like, oh, what's up, man? Were you here last year? I was like, no, I'm new here. He's like, all right, well, I'll show you around. Like, whatever you need, I'll help you out. And he was the nicest kid and became my friend from day one. And I was like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Those are the best.
Yeah.
The guy who's friends immediately with the new kid.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That must have been so nice.
It was the best. Dude, it was the best. Did you ever cheat in high school?
Did I ever cheat in high school? No, not like bad cheating. Like maybe
there's a story that's coming to your mind. I see.
Okay,
it.
Because
what's the story?
In science classes, you know, like the biology tables.
Yeah.
How they were that black, almost marble. The science table,
like the labs. Countertops.
Iron. Sure.
No, the island countertops.
Yes, the island countertops. What type of material are those countertops?
A countertop. I don't know.
Anyways, those you could like kind of like you could rub your finger on it. You could see it. So sometimes I would maybe like take my eraser. I'm saying maybe like and I would like maybe write out an equation or like some little thing on the
desk.
Oh,
you're saying on the desk before the test, you would like write down an equation that you would need to remember.
Yes. But I never
and that's what you consider cheating.
No, I never like stole the answers.
Oh,
I think
God.
I found ways of getting my notes in.
What an innocent
individual
boy.
Thing. But I had a really great I took AP psychology in high school. And
oh, nice.
It was like a college course to get college credit.
Yep.
Though I wish I didn't take it because it took away a humanities course by the time I got to college. I wish I took art history. I wish I did.
In college or high school?
Maybe in college because I think I would have appreciated it more than I would have in high school. But it was just I never had the opportunity and never could because I already satisfied my humanities credit because I took psychology in high school.
Oh.
But our teacher, Miss Allen, she's maybe married now. She was an amazing teacher and really helped you figure out how your brain works and how to memorize things. So that's why I think I have like a good ability to memorize and soak in a lot of information was because she taught us how to think and that helped me become a better student.
Yeah, you are. Your memory is ridiculously incredible.
Like, I knew a girl in college who had a photographic memory and you would not think at all that this girl was the smartest person in the room.
Right.
But she can ace any test because she has a photographic memory.
You're pretty close to it. You just blasted out your monologue from the Arthur Miller play in high school almost 10 years later.
Once like, I get something long term, sure.
But also you have really good memories of like my first party in LA. You remember that we were both wearing jackets and when you met Patricia and I thought it was the first time and I was convinced it was and you were like, no, it was the second time because blah, blah, blah. And like all these very specific memories of like who was there and where they were. And
I remember my last day of elementary school was May 30th, 2003. And I'm pretty sure.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Finding Nemo came out that day.
That's what I'm talking
about. And we went over to Katie Stone's house. And I remember the first time I ever learned what Axe body spray was that day. feel like her brother was in like middle school.
Is that a positive or negative memory for you?
I kind of, like, sensory smell of like Axe. And I remember that day, and I just remember still being a kid, but her brother was really cool, and he like, I don't know, his bathroom, he was like, have you heard of Axe? And I was like, no. And he's like, dude, the ladies will love you. And I was like, ho.
Apparently smell, the olfactory sense, is the strongest one that is tied to memory. Like, out of all the five senses, taste, touch, sight, sound, whatever, your smell, that is the one that is ingrained in your memory the most. So if you smell something that you smelled 20 years ago versus seeing something that you saw 20 years ago, apparently, and I may be wrong about this,
you're
but
right.
That is the most, it's the most ingrained.
It's your olfactory, your olfactory sense, and I remember in AP Psychology, they would teach us smells like an old factory. Olfactory.
That's good.
Well, I remember like dendrites on neurons.
Yes.
And then the axon is the body, and it's covered in fatty cells. And then with neurotransmitters, the little area where the neurotransmitter goes into is like the nodes of Ranvier. Like, dude.
Like, you retain
nucleus
the stuff that
is the brain of the cell. Cytoplasm fills it well. Vacuole, storage sac, cell membrane covers like a wrap. Mitochondria is the power source. ER moves through a course, the endoplasmic reticulum. ER moves through a course. Lysosomes digest the waste. Golgi bodies pinch in place. Chloroplast, cell wall, only implants, not for all.
Did you make this up? Or they taught that to
no,
you?
No, it's like nucleus, the brain of the cell.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, your brain has this thing where you will retain information that is completely irrelevant for the rest of your life forever. Yeah. And I guess maybe you just have more room in the hard drive.
I can recite to you the first play I was ever in.
That's
in
what
first
I'm saying.
Grade. Upon a lily pad. Good morning, Freddie. What would you like for breakfast? Bugs or flies? I'm not hungry, Mama. Not hungry. You sick? No, Mama. I just don't feel like eating. That's all. Why don't you go play with your friends? They won't let me play with them anymore, Mama. They say you can't jump high enough to play leapfrog. I keep landing on someone's head.
Okay.
Ouch.
Okay.
I've had that happen to me.
The point has been made.
Ugh, I know.
You have a very good memory. Sometimes it's intimidating, but
you're intimidated by my memory?
Yes, because I only remember very specific things that like my brain triggers as this is going to be necessary, so remember it. And this probably isn't necessary, and then I'll forget it. And having you be around so many experiences of my life means that I sort of have a memory. It's just exported to your hard drive, and it's not in mine. So if ever you need to access a memory, like, hey, Matt, what was that party that we went to? I think it was with Cam and at Devin's house, and you just will know the answer.
Usually I can, but sometimes...
But then it doesn't matter.
But then sometimes I'm really bad with, like, Mike will bring around friends or, like, girls that he hangs out with, and... But usually it's always like so late into the night where I'm like, oh, what are your names? I probably will never see this person again.
And it happened seven times.
It's now happened seven times in a row.
It's okay. You know who they are now, right?
Jess, Angela, and Mika.
Yeah.
See?
Great job.
All right. Now I know them.
I tell you about the time that I cheated in high school?
Oh, yes.
And got away with it?
Tell me about it.
I cheated all the time in high school. I don't know if this is incriminating at all, but I cheated. I did not. That's the thing. I didn't want to memorize stuff because I knew it wasn't going to be... it wasn't going to be relevant at all after I took the test. I don't need to know what document King George the 12th, like it doesn't matter.
Magna Carta.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
No, it's like, King George was.
Like, that's frustrating to me.
No, like he was around Declaration of Independence. King James is Magna Carta, I'm pretty sure.
Wasn't it Martin Luther that did the Magna Carta?
Martin Luther was the guy who revised the church.
He nailed something to door.
No, he nailed something to the door.
I think it was
like, these are the new rules of the King James church. We know nothing. We know nothing.
So anyway,
don't listen to us.
So I did whatever I could to minimize my brain resources to get through the school. We would take tests and you're sitting next to the person next to you. So me and this other kid didn't really study. We each studied half of what we needed to study or whatever it was. We took a history test and it was a multiple choice answer, 20 questions. We sat next to each other. We shared every answer. We cheated the whole way through. Next day, she goes through the class, gives us her test back. We both got like a 92 or whatever, an 83, whatever it was. And after class, she's like, oh, Mike, Dave, can you guys come here for a minute? And we're like, I literally just said, let me do the talking. And so she's like, so, hey, I'm not accusing you guys of anything. I know you guys are great students, but I just happened to notice that, yes, you got all these questions right. But the questions that you got wrong on a multiple choice test, you also picked the same wrong answer. And there's not one difference between either of your tests. And you guys sat next to each other. And I just need to know, like, did you guys cheat on this test? And I said, oh, well, Miss Marola, I can easily explain this. We actually studied together and we actually used my notes, which I got from someone else. So what probably happened was we both studied off the same flawed notes without the same misinformation. And that's why our incorrect answers are the same, because we had the same misinformation. And that's why our tests are the same. But no, in no way would we ever cheat. You saw us. We're sitting next to each other the whole time. How could we cheat? And she said, oh my God, you're right. I'm so sorry. That makes so much sense. Here's your test, and gave us our test back. And I got away with it.
Whoa. Now, do you think if you were a teacher and a young Mike Sheffer was pulling that move on you, you would be able to detect?
Oh, yeah. I have such a good detection for bullshit. I know when someone's bullshitting me.
So what would you say? Bullshit? I don't know how you even respond to a kid giving.
I mean, I would just say, let me see the notes.
Oh, yeah.
Show me the notes. Where are they?
Can kids be like, I have to have a lawyer present? can they say that? Like,
no, they don't have the right. They don't have the Fifth Amendment right to, you know, invoke silence on a questioning.
I actually remember one time I did kind of cheat. Well, I did cheat. Sixth grade, Mrs. Easton.
Great name.
She was the best teacher I ever had. In
what class?
It was English, literature. Language arts.
You thrived.
And she taught us about etymology, man. She, like,
the Latin roots. Yeah.
At sixth grade, and made it fun. The power went out one time.
Yeah.
You know, the class usually when the lights go out, they're like, ooh, yeah, like go crazy. She pulled out a flashlight, kept it under her face, almost like a ghost story, and told us all about ancient Latin and stuff.
Wow.
It was really cool. But one time she gave us a brain teaser, and we had to like go home and think about it and then talk about it in a group. Well, what I did was I just had the text. I went on Google, Googled it, found out what the real answer was, and came back. And then I kind of muttered to my group. I go, guys, I know what the answer is because I Googled it last night, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I think she heard. Because then she got up after class and we all shared our answers. And she goes, great work, everyone. But somebody in this room cheated. And I don't want to say who that person was or is, but I want them to know that I know. And I remember my brain, like, you know when you have tunnel vision?
Like my whole body's like sweating right now. I can just feel the anxiety.
Your peripheral vision is just vibrating.
You go, and it's all, yeah, that's it.
And I sat there and played dumb.
Oh, you didn't cop to it?
No, she didn't. She didn't ask us. She didn't ask for anybody to come forward. She didn't ask for whoever that person was to see.
What a great teacher.
But I'm pretty sure it was
me. 100%.
But I thought she couldn't hear me. But then she's like, I was so confident we got the answer right.
Yeah.
But she said this thing at the end of class.
What a great teacher she was.
Oof. Hope you're enjoying this episode. We're just going to take a quick break to give a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now back to the episode. You're pretty musically talented. So when did you pick up an instrument, Mike? Did you take piano lessons as a young Jewish boy?
I feel
boy?
Like I'm on PBS broadcast right now. This is like a PBS Mike Sheffer special.
Did you take piano lessons?
Never piano.
Did you take guitar lessons?
Yes. My parents, they believed in education. And education doesn't stop at the classroom. It's education in the arts, education in humanity. So from like when I was 5 years old, I was taking Taekwondo, which is a form of martial arts.
Taekwondo.
It's the Korean martial arts. It's not
I've heard
like
of it.
It's more of a sport than like ancient, like deadly martial art form. It's more of a sport.
Taekwondo, you get to wear like the helmets and stuff.
When you're doing sparring, yeah. Yeah. It's not about learning how to beat somebody up. It's really just like a physical and mental art form of
Korean tradition.
Do
you have the pictures from your Taekwondo?
My mom has it on her dresser.
Was it the old school 90s one where they have like the prism of light at the end of your hand?
No.
Oh, my best friend John took karate. Well, the karate kids.
So karate's Japanese. That's a Japanese martial art.
I know, but the way they took the martial arts photos in our towns, they would have you like pose like, you know, you're about to strike. And they would add this like prism of
like a lens flare.
Yeah, like a lens flare.
Oh my
light.
Gosh.
Like there was a beam of light coming out of your hand.
Oh
like,
my
like
god!
You had the power. but I always wanted
to
join.
That's so funny.
I wanted to take karate just so I could get that
the photo.
Okay, so you take...
Can we find one of those photos and recreate it?
I think we were trying to do it when we did that Liza
shoot. Oh, yeah.
But I don't think the pictures turned out as well as we wanted. But go on. So you're taking taekwondo.
Yeah, so that's the Korean art form. I was doing that 3 times a week with my 3 younger brothers. And my parents also signed me up for guitar lessons, and I did not like it at all. So a guitar lesson was like a chore that I didn't want to do. But my parents were like, listen, you hate it now, but when you're 18, you're going to thank us that we made you practice this instrument from when you were a little kid. And I was like, well, I'll play an instrument. I just don't want to play guitar. They're like, what do you want to play? I said, I want to play drums. So they said, okay, we'll get you a drum teacher. So I did drums and guitar simultaneously. Ugh. I was booked and busy as a kid. So taekwondo 3 times a week, guitar lesson one day, drum lesson the other day, and then practice those musical instruments every day. And then from then on, I've played guitar every single day of my life. I used to bring my guitar to high school every day. I would eat my lunch first period so that during the lunch period, I would just play guitar for those 40 minutes and get an extra 40 minutes of practice in every day. Like, I love music. It's, I think, the best thing. We talked about this on the Jason episode
YouTube was around and strong and had as large of a content database as it does now, I would have been able to teach myself guitar. My parents never signed me up for guitar lessons.
Did you want to?
I remember my dad bought me a guitar. I had a pamphlet on how to play the guitar. But the only like guitar lessons were with like Mrs. Moss in our town, who was like a family friend's mom, and I just didn't feel like...
That's what I'm saying. The teacher matters so much.
I didn't want to go over there and, like, I don't know. It would have felt like a chore to me.
Yeah.
And so I discouraged myself from ever playing it. I played the violin when
really?
I was in sixth grade. I was in the orchestra. G, D, A, E were the strings. And that made me know the notes. So I know the notes on the piano. I don't know chords, but I can play like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Right, because you know the notes.
D, A, A, B, B, A, G, G, F sharp, E, E, D. Like, I know that.
Right.
But that's the extent is basic violin. Because I remember I got a Sharpie out and I wrote on my keyboard what the notes were so I could. But I didn't want to take lessons because I was too scared to like sit down with some big adult and be scrutinized over hand movements and tune and sound.
When you're a kid, everything is so monumental because it's all new. It's all for the first time. When you ever use something for the first time, it has so much more gravitas and impact. So like if you were to go to this teacher that you don't like, the fear is, oh, well, now I'm not going to like guitar, so I may as well just not do it. Present day, I think you and I have very specific ideas of relationships with friends, with parents, with girlfriends. Do you have an overarching theory of relationships that you hold true to yourself, or is it instinctual to you and not something that you've really intellectualized?
It's a tough question, and it's tough to figure out which angle to approach that question, but it is such a good question. I mean, there are people you've known for a really long time, and I think those relationships are important to hold and to value and to maintain. And then there's a lot of friendships that you make by putting yourself out there, and that is very important. All the friends I have in my life today, I wouldn't have had if I never made the decision to put myself out there. I think sometimes, and there's no judgment to it, but there's sometimes where people get too comfortable with the people around them and they think that, oh, I should just be friends with this person because I'm just familiar with them. Familiarity isn't always the best way to
create. Foundation of a relationship.
No, not at all. And I think you need to find people who are on your same wavelength, like you for you, and have no judgment and are supportive no matter how much success or how terrible something comes your way, that they're there for you. I think a lot of times, sometimes people pick and choose what they want out of a certain person and they're not there for them fully. And that's okay. You can't like be somebody's full-time friend, but it's important to treasure the ones who love you and really mean it. You know what I mean?
Fair weather friends, I think, is the term for people who are there during fair weather, but when the weather turns bad, they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah, because there are some friends from high school that I have looking back that I loved being around. But then once all that internet stuff happened, they kind of distanced themselves from me. They didn't like...
Oh, yeah, you do have that aspect of your life.
The happiness that I was going in, and I get sometimes really hung up about it. But then there are some of those friends who really shine out to me because they're just nothing but supportive and true and great. Their perception of me hasn't changed, you know?
I understand, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely a unique situation that I haven't had to weather, but you've done, I think, a pretty good job. And we've talked about it a few times where it sometimes creates anxiety, but like you've clearly done well for yourself and are in a successful position. So.
Yeah, you should be with the friends who don't say why, but just be with the friends who say why not. Like, you know, if you want to do something cool, be around with someone who's just like, why not do that? Not be with someone who's just like, why do that?
Speaking of putting yourself out there, let's reveal some Mike Sheffer, Matt King lore about how we met, which do you know the story?
We were at Good Time at Davy Wayne's.
I used to come to LA when I was living in New York, like at least once a year, sometimes twice a year, because I loved LA, especially in the winter. New York is cold and gray and brutal and just oppressive, and I could escape to LA, and I usually would like get an Airbnb in Venice, and in the middle of February I leave the parka at home and don't wear the wool socks, and I'm on the beach in February in a t-shirt.
Yeah,
like that was mind-blowing to me to be in a t-shirt in February. It blows my mind. It was like 2016 or 2017. I had gone to Davy Wayne's with some friends that I met out here, and it was like on a Saturday night, and I had a great time with them. And I thought, oh, that what a great place. That reminds me of like a cool Brooklyn spot, Davy Wayne's. And another week goes by and I hadn't been to Davy Wayne's again. And it was a Sunday night and I didn't have anywhere to go. All my friends were busy that I knew. I was leaving like the next day or on the Tuesday or whatever. And I remember thinking like, well, I'm in LA. It's a Sunday night. I was, you know, an entrepreneur. I had the restaurant, the website business. Like, I'm not a guy who needs to get up for an office job. And very thankful for not having that 9-to-5 work life. And I have the freedom to go out on a Sunday night to a bar if I want to. And I'm leaving anyway, so may as well go back to that bar that I really enjoyed and I thought it was cool. And it's LA, so maybe like LA is cool and people go out on a Sunday night. It's a town of creatives and non-traditional people. So let me just go check it out. Worst case, there's no one there. I turn around and go home. Better than sitting on my phone and scrolling on a Sunday night. So I end up going on the Sunday night. I open the door and Davy Wayne's is popping, packed.
Oh, yeah.
Like a Saturday night. And it turns out Sunday night is the night to go to Davy Wayne's. Uh-huh. So I go through. It's like a refrigerator door. Like the door to get in there is a huge old fridge. Such a cool experience.
Bumping music from the 70s.
It's such a vibe. And I just went and got a drink and I was just walking around having a good time.
You were by yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
I do that a lot.
Someone else was with you. Okay?
No, I go by myself a lot, like to concerts and like movies.
Which is good to do.
There's no pretense when you're by yourself. You just are. So I think we were waiting in line to get food or something. And
then we got to talking.
We got to talking.
And you said, I knew that you knew the same people.
Yeah. And in New York, I was working with some YouTubers that you knew. And you were a big Viner at the time.
Yes. And you were giving me just a great pep talk on what I needed to do with my life. And I loved it because you were so sincere. You meant it. You wanted the best out of me and for me. And
because you were struggling with something that I just thought was so unique, but also so simple to fix. And like the rut that you were in. And I was like, no, dude, just fuck that. Just do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after that night, we got each other's number.
Yes.
So we kept in touch.
And then we went on that trip.
Oh, to Bon Air.
Yeah.
Oh, love that trip.
To tie this all together, you said, I've made a lot of friends by putting myself out there.
Yes. And if you never went there, I would have never met you. If I never put myself out there, I would have never met you. If I never went to that one party, I would have never met Patricia.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It, like a lot of good things in life come by putting yourself out there. And I think that's so important.
I think my theory is like, say yes to things, say yes to most things.
But it's important to also say no to some things.
Well, of course.
Say yes to things that you want for yourself. Don't say yes to things, I guess, sometimes.
I don't know.
People.
Should we be out here giving advice?
I don't know. We don't know what we're talking about. But
no, clearly not.
No, that is so true. And that kind of like brings it all back to like what we were talking about, you know? This was like a breeze. It was kind of nice, like kind of both of us interviewing our own selves.
Yeah,
but I think it was focused on you. Maybe like
I'm trying to throw the spotlight back on you because I think you're a lot more interesting. And people
I think
know
you're a lot more interesting, but
people want to know the Matt King story.
I know I should, but we'll do that. We'll do this
on
again
video?
On video, of course. By the time we set up our video setup, we still have like the furniture
being
on
delivered
its way. So hopefully, we get that up in the next 2 weeks.
Couple weeks, yeah.
I want to aim for 2 weeks at least. We also have our next podcast already recorded, but Mike needs a little bit more time to edit it.
Yes.
But you're going to love the guest. We love the guest. And
but this is cool that we got to do this, because I think it's like,
yeah, I was hesitant at first because I was like, oh, but we don't have a guest. Is it going to be that interesting for people to listen to just us talk? But anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you go check out all the other episodes that you may or may have not listened to.
We have a lot of good guests.
Really great guests. And a lot of guests lined up and a lot of guests who are interested in being on.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I'm so excited too.
All right, well, have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Much love.